18th through July 22nd at Horning's Hideout in North Plains. Tickets and more information online at stringsummit.com.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 31st Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place from July 4th through July 7th at Waterfront Park in Portland. Performing artists this year include Beth Hart, Robert Randolph and the Family Band, Ruthie Foster, and the Mavericks, as well as annual traditions like the Bill Rhodes Harmonica Blow-Off, Zydeco Dance Lessons, Blue Cruises, After Parties, and much more. Again, that's the 31st Annual Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place from July 4th through July 7th at Waterfront Park in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
When I tell people I'm a volunteer, they say, well, that must be very hard. And I can't even explain to them how wonderful and the gifts that I have gotten from the people that I've met.
That was Jolene, a Lumina Hospice volunteer. Join us for Local Folks Podcast Episode 7 as she shares her experiences. You can find Local Folks at kboo.fm. Go to audio, list of programs, podcasts, web only, and click on Local Folks.
This is 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 FM Hood River and the Gorge, 104.3 FM Philomath and Corvallis, K220 HR Hood River, K282 BH Philomath.
This is KBOO Portland.
And today is July 2nd, 2018. You just heard a radio ID, 90.7 to Portland, 91.9 Hood River, 104.3 Corvallis Philomath, and KBOO.FM via the World Wide Web. And I am here with you. I am Cecil Prescott.
I am Celeste Carey. And the giggles for some reason.
The giggles yeah. are good.
Giggles are good. I need more of them.
Yeah.
Well, especially given our topic today.
Well, considering where we are, where are we?
We're dealing with schism. We talked a lot about schism on the program you just heard with Amy Goodman and Democracy Now. We talked about possibly healing schism with regard to the election of a new regime, new paradigm in Mexico. And so, you know, if you're looking at healing there, it makes it even more apparent how disjointed, separated, divided we are here as their northern neighbor in the United States.
And certainly this isn't a new paradigm in terms of as a country, as a nation, in terms of divided loyalty and division over many things, ideology, theology, type of pizza you like? No, I'm just joking.
No, I mean that. Hey, people have had, they've come to blows over the whole idea of fruit on pizza.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So, I mean, that was valid. That was valid. But what we're talking about today is how some of the political shifts, the rhetoric, the language, the accusations, the actions have created an incredible fault line among us. Even our entertainment features that fault line. The recent reappearance and now disappearance. Of Roseanne, for example, featured a family divided along political lines. And that is a function of art reflecting life. Mm-hmm. Now we find that the white supremacist hope of a civil war may be coming about, but not quite as the race war they've tried to foment. More now as a war of ideologies, of politics, of policies.
Yeah, and you know, unless we become ahistoric in terms of our thinking, I think it's helpful to ground our thinking, our discussion on history, on this topic in terms of a nation divided over many things and mm-hmm. coming to blow, and just, you know, how often, how easy we forget our history as a nation. And even just looking back and thinking, wow, this is a unique time, which it is, because it's important to remember that times are based on what preceded it. You know, those of us who are a certain age mm-hmm. remember a time not that many decades ago when it seems as if the nation was being torn apart violently over justice issues, over civil rights, and over war.
Mm-hmm.
The 60s and early 70s aren't that far away.
You know, I want to throw another one in there. And for some people, it might seem that maybe I'm being a little specious, you know, like it wasn't that serious. But it was. And that was the attempts to get the Equal Rights Amendment mm-hmm. ratified.
Mm-hmm.
Because that caused quite a stir in the late 70s.
And it might be... I think it could be argued, and one of the articles you referred me to suggested this, is that it's part of certainly a legacy, and the fact that the Civil War, 1861, 1865, was never settled,
mm-hmm.
That it's something that hasn't been settled, that continues to stir, that raises its head, and that from time to time our nation, our culture break out into deep discussion, if that was only the case.
If that was only the case, you know. I mean, it's like we've heard both in terms of politics has always been kind of ugly and fraught with name-calling, and it has, but not... We've not been as uncivil or incivil as we are now. And also maybe just saying that it's not the first time that we've had this kind of disruptive policies with regard to families. We have, you know, and life and history and people are cyclic. We are. But the problem is when we don't learn from our experiences and the past, and even if the road is slightly different, we're traveling that same road down to the same conclusion, you know. And we've got to learn how to maybe have that deep conversation instead of a deep divide.
Well, you know, I haven't yet seen, as it was the case leading up to the Civil War, elected representatives on the floor of the Senate. What was his name? Was beaten Stevens on the floor of the Senate by someone who disagrees.
You say beaten, but you need to really you need to unfold what you mean. He was assaulting. He was beating the crap out of somebody. We haven't seen that yet, though Maxine Waters came up and said, you know, she's been getting death threats. Certainly. And so she said, well, you better know how to shoot straight then, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, when sadly, we're not that far away.
No.
You know, we don't beat people anymore. We just shoot them. And that's a sad commentary. That's sad. That's all I can say.
And, you know, so what we, as you can tell, what we are unfolding this morning is trying to discover, understand, and hear thoughts and reflections on whether this is true. Well, we did. I think it is true in terms of this division. Whether the rhetoric is causing further disruption, and what we can do about it. Certainly, there are those who are advocating violence and participating in violence. So where are we? How can we resolve these differences?
Can we?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we should.
We should.
We should. I mean, first and foremost, we have a name, and it's called United States of America. Now, I think that right there should be at least one indicator on the path. You know, second, we are a neighbor to at least 200 other countries, you know, directly. And so we talk about being a symbol and a light. Well, you know, yeah.
<I'm sorry. laughs>
I love that arch. that hit it right there. You know, we're supposed to be a symbol. Yeah,
well,
we're pretty dim right now. But, you know, so we need to get to some type of place where we can have discussion, we can talk, we can overcome our differences and stop waving death and destruction as the desirable outcome of this conflict.
It occurred to me when you were just mentioning that in terms of, you know, symbol of as being a United
mm-hmm.
States, and certainly we're a couple of days away from the 4th of July.
Well, which is fraught with his own stuff.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. I was just wondering, you know, and whether or not the president would, like, symbolically go to the Statue of Liberty and, you know, never mind.
I don't, because I have an image of her kicking her toe or something,
But the idea of that happening, and going back to our history, you know, okay, let me finish that thought. Going to the Statue of Liberty, the symbol of our mm-hmm. nation, a friendship with the nation of France, and the symbol of welcoming the immigrants and all. I guess
mm-hmm.
that's probably not won't be his.
Yeah, ain't happening.
But in terms of the United States, and certainly the name itself. Is a result of even at the beginning of the European attempt to build a nation in the late 18th century, it was a nation of colonies, separate
yes.
and divided, and initially. It did not necessarily work, and then came the Constitution,
mm-hmm.
which sought to bring together these different colonies with different interests, different cultures, and different visions, and somehow create a unity that take into account all of these things. And those divisions that was a part of this nation's founding continue on and manifest, I think, and erupt every once in a while. So it's a continuing discussion, and we need to find ways in which to make it united more than on paper.
So, you know, we want to hear your thoughts on, are we heading toward a civil war, or can we make this just an episode of Growing Pains where we come together and let all of our differences become our strength?
Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And we look forward to your conversation and your thoughts. So let's go to Cody.
Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Well, the fault line was already there. It was always there.
Yes.
I think that the race war, especially against African American, has always been waged against African Americans. Even during integration and when times are good, it's just that black folks weren't fully aware of it. And it was coming in the form of economics. And it was the economics through redlining, through banking, that eventually led to gentrification and how the majority of the black middle class is rapidly shrinking. It's also, as far as the uncivilness in our society, I think it's the uncivilized behavior and the emotions that it elicits that obfuscates the truth of what's really going on. And I think the uncivil behavior is fomented amongst the people so that we can be continually manipulated. Is that a good word?
Well, yeah.
You know, I mean, you have people who actually have more in common than it appears to be. It's just that their political leaders are obfuscating all of this through fomenting certain type of public behaviors. And those public, and that uncivil, closed-minded behavior is basically what polarizes groups against one another. And I think it's sad because these groups that are being polarized have actually more in common with one another than the political leaders who are setting them against one another.
So,
and
I'll let you finish. I wanted you to unpack your statement, but continue.
Okay, so, well, unfortunately, I see this in all of our corrupt political wings. And they're just dividing and conquering through this uncivil behavior with a lot of half-truths. And, once upon a time, I kind of understand how that worked out well, but it's like we have the internet now. We have information at our tip of our fingers. And we could go and actually do some fact-checking and researching ourselves and go, oh, this is more complicated than it appears to be.
So how do we, one, you asserted that, you know, the divide that we're facing is often fomented or encouraged by political leaders. So how do we get beyond that? And your last statement about, information is at hand. My question to you, that may be true, but where we find our information are often mm-hmm. differed. So we go through our favorite sources for information that often are contrary. So how do we, how do they get beyond the manipulation of political leaders, and how do we find a common language or even common truth?
Okay, well, you're bringing up probably in a nice way the word coin that we're all throwing around, this coin called fake news.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's interesting mainly because I think it's very important for people who want a balanced understanding of what's going on around them is to flip channels between both left and right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I come from a family who once belonged to a religious cult, and that mm-hmm. cult helped me understand the dynamics of cult thinking and how cult thinking has a group dynamic. And how it says here, you only look at this information.
Yeah, because this is the only one that has our stamp of approval.
Right, Right. And they also understand the power. See, I think there's power in mind virus, and I think the ultimate mind virus is truth. Mm-hmm. And there's certain truths that we'll come across that will always stick in our heads no matter what. Mm-hmm. So when we take time out to actually, like, listen to KBOO, listen to a right-wing commentator, listen to Fox, if we listen to Amy Goodman, if we listen to all of these different diametrically opposing shows, it'll give us a better idea of what's really going on and how we're really all being played against one another.
Yep.
In the end. And unfortunately, it's always those people who, in my opinion and observation, appears to be the people who are closed-minded and myopic in their research. Mm-hmm. I'm only going to use this source.
Yeah.
Are always going to be the people who will be manipulated by that group. And we will, when these groups get together in a room, it's their uncivil, one-sided emotionalism that's going to obfuscate the truth of what's really going on. We're all being played. All of us. Expect the Democratic. It took me a while to understand how the Congressional Black Caucus has basically sold African American working class under the table for themselves.
Well, I mean, we had carpetbaggers back in the day. Why not? But Cody, we got some other callers on the line. Thank you for setting the tone.
And you're listening to KBOO, More Talk Radio with Celeste, and I am Cecil. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Are we headed towards a civil war, and what can we do to prevent that? Let's go to Deanna.
Good morning.
Yes. Good morning, Cecil and Celeste. Thank you for having this show. And, of course, I was listening attentively to hear what your solutions were going to be. But anyway, my comment on what you have said so far, first of all, I wanted to chime in and say that I really agree with probably 98% of what the last caller just said. The only thing that I'm concerned about is that people who are truly concerned about the human dignity, worth, and rights of every human being are not leading the propaganda war here. And I agree with Cody that it is a propaganda war for people's interests, people who are in power and are afraid of losing that power, mm-hmm. and that they have literally, through propaganda over years, many years, going back hundreds of years, but in talking about the recent history, certainly since Reagan took office, infected people with the belief that we are not a united people. Mm-hmm. That this country is a people of white people and Christian country, neither of which is in fact the case. Maybe it was founded to be that way, and that's a problem, but it hasn't been an unsurmountable problem since people heard the words, if not the spirit, mm-hmm. of all men are created equal, because that, of course, did not refer to every human being, as we know. But in the minds of many of us, it does mean literally what it says. So yes. Here we are. And the founding fathers didn't mean everybody. Didn't mean women, didn't mean indigenous people, didn't mean black people, et cetera, et cetera,
didn't mean poor white folks, for all of those who think that this country was made for them. They were excluded, too.
Exactly. So here's one of the root problems, if you will, but the main thing I think is we are definitely divided now, and we are having, in my opinion, a civil war. Not the kind that we had before, and I certainly hope that couldn't come to anything like that. But we are in a battle, I believe, over this issue and over the issues that interpretation by manipulators, you know, have put onto the group, the masses of us, right?
Yes.
What does freedom mean? Freedom to some people means the freedom to do whatever I want.
Mm-hmm.
And freedom to others means the precious value that says nobody gets to be enslaved or treated as less than anybody else. Those are very different interpretations of freedom. And that's the civil war, for one thing, I think, that we're having. And I just read an article yesterday in the Times, a long one, which is well worth reading, and a bit sad and discouraging, about how the right has very effectively weaponized the First Amendment. And all we have to do is look in downtown Portland on Saturday to see how that plays out, with some
yes.
people coming in who are avowed white supremacists claiming the right to free speech and hate speech being free speech. And the person who fought in the courts, the lawyer who argued and won back in whenever it was, 50s, I think, maybe 60s, 50s, about interpretations for people who were protesting repression of McCarthyism and so forth.
Yeah.
And he says, I'm so sorry now that I won that round, because free speech, the First Amendment interpretation, has been turned against progressive values and so forth. And that's, I'd love to listen to what you have to say. That's all right. I have to say.
Well, thank you. I mean, that's a lot. And
yes.
And we appreciate your reflections in sharing with us.
Thank you.
You're listening to More Talk Radio on your community connection, KBOO Portland, 91.9 in Points East, 104.3 in the South, and KBOO.FM everywhere else. To join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. And good morning, Bill.
Good morning. Someone mentioned the importance of history with this situation. And I know we could go back to the abolition of slavery, moving forward to, you know, the civil rights movement and so on. But I'd like to say that first and foremost, without a court system to represent you, you are not free. And I think I could point that out with the fact that in 1865 or so, black people were freed in this country, but it wasn't until the 1960s that we had actual protection under the court of law. So technically, we weren't freed in this country until the 60s, because the courts would not protect us. But with that said, I would like to point out the importance of education in this. And I don't know if many people remember, some two decades ago, many mm-hmm. states were in arms. Many people in the school systems wanted to destroy Latino studies, African American mm-hmm. studies, and there were people literally protesting about the fact that they did not want their children taking those study courses in public school. But we wouldn't have had to have those courses had we not been struck out with the respect to history being written in this country prior to. So I can't imagine how much progression we would have had those students who would be now probably approaching their mid-20s and 30s had that exploration of other. And I think that if you explore other, you can find it in your heart to incorporate them into what is the new American dream, I guess, so to speak.
Yeah.
So when we talk about the importance of that being destroyed, that, in my opinion, was a planned approach to making sure that we wouldn't be talking about a united group of people today, but still a divided people who are merely uneducated about the progression of other.
Well, let me ask you, since you raised the importance of education, do you have any thoughts on the dismantling of mm-hmm. a public education and
the diseducation?
Yeah.
Well, you know, someone mentioned the seed of fascism, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of people don't, maybe I haven't heard many people talk about it, but Hitler just didn't attack the rich and the wealthy. He first went out, he went after the educated as well. So I think in order to have, I guess, this seed work, you almost have to destroy public education. Because education is really what? It's a progression of understanding other. You know, so if you destroy it, what do you have? You have a broken down system by which people are not learning about one another. We're not learning about the world. So it's easy for us to be fed the, I guess, education of whatever someone's ideology is over learning for self. So the destruction of public education. So when you hear teachers talk about all we're teaching is to is the test, we're not teaching individuality. We're not teaching critical thought. I think critical thought is a component that once it's destroyed in education, all we really have are robots that are prepared to go out and teach. And not only are they destroying public education, but just look on the attack of higher learning by some who are in disagreement with people coming together and having a voice. So all you have to do is look at those who believe that now our university system is, I guess, raising a new group of people who somehow, if they disagree with those in the Trump world, guess what? Even those universities are a threat. So look at the attack on funding of public universities as well.
Yes.
You know, one of the challenges we have if we call ourselves progressive or liberal or whatever, independent, is the fact that we're facing attacks on multiple fronts, but it's under the guise of one major ideology, and that is of the elite white supremacist ideology. And so we're so often caught scrambling and trying to divide our energy to attack this hydra, you know, that it's hard to sometimes get an overarching idea. But if I was going to say one thing to people, it is teach each other critical thinking. Because if we can weigh and assess and reevaluate our situation, our information, our access or lack of access to our social systems, we stand a better chance of understanding how to fight this. But I like how everybody has kind of summed it up by saying we need to look at the attack and to work against this many-headed hydra, but also work against the single-minded big behemoth push.
Sure, one more.
Well,
one more
we got a full buffer, so if you could make it in 30 seconds.
I'll make it quick. Okay, recently I've heard this thing about the Democratic Party not having an identity and the Republican Party only having one identity. I think the Democratic Party is truly just filled with many ideas, and I do not think that it's safe to try to find one platform by which to work, because becoming one-sided actually weakens us as a people, no matter our political affiliation. That's all I want to say, and thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much. And you are listening to KBOO FM. This is More Talk Radio with Celeste and I am Cecil. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. We're talking about, are we headed towards a new kind of civil war in the United States?
Let me jump in here real quick. There's a couple of things. One is, I'm not advocating for an overarching identity. I don't think that's a good idea, but we need to look at maybe how the forces that oppose us are able to keep framing the argument. And that is because they do have one overarching ideology, maybe not identity, but ideology that they are able to push forward, and people will lockstep. There is, I think, more of a willingness for, and I don't want to characterize it as just Republicans, but there's more willingness for people who are foisting these anti, quality of life ideas on us to buy in and support each other and hold the nose and swallow some sugar with the nasty than there is for those who are more progressive. And we need to be more strategic in how we respond to that. Mm-hmm. And so I think that comes from discussion and listening to each other and taking the fact that our callers are offering us different views on how to do this, and we need to figure out how to synthesize that. I don't know. What's your thoughts, Cecil?
Yeah, I mean, the question is how to synthesize it.
Yeah, that's true. What's our process that we're going to use to synthesize? Well, let's go to our callers and see if we can get some more information into the hopper. Good morning, Lou.
Morning. So you're looking for the synthesis of a strategy to counteract the Hydra. It sounds like.
Wow.
Yeah. But we have to still remain open, because there's not going to be one synthesis.
Right. Well, in terms of what Cecil mentioned to start with, of history being helpful as opposed to being ahistorical, Cecil may be old enough to recognize, apparently there was someone who had a different term besides Trump's term, criticizing journalists and the free press. This was circa 1969, I think it was Governor of Maryland, who later went to higher office, mm-hmm. Who used three words with alliteration to criticize the free press then. He didn't say, he eventually resigned from office, and it wasn't Nixon, because he wasn't from Maryland, but he basically called the press the nattering nabobs of negativism.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if either of you remember which politician that was. It doesn't really matter.
The vice president on the Nixon?
Right, Agnew.
Mr. Agnew.
Who was forced to resign before Nixon was forced to resign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In terms of strategy and synthesis, it seems like one of the initial questions you asked was about healing and having a conversation where there's more unity. I'm not sure if both of you think so far you've been focusing on negative stuff or just the problem, but I think one of the things that's helpful to illustrate is things that are going really well despite Trump's attempts at monopolizing things. For example, apparently there were 700 different demonstrations against Trump's zero tolerance separating families policy in different cities in the United States yesterday, or this past weekend. There's also, I think, really hope in terms of electoral politics. Some more radical protesters would say, well, elections not so much, but I think elections are really important. Mm-hmm. It looks like London Breed was just elected the first African-American woman mayor of San Francisco. It looks like you probably both already know there is, I believe, Alexandria Cortez, who was elected at 28 in New York City against a relatively conservative incumbent Democrat with vastly more money. Portland itself, as we know, recently hired the first African-American woman police chief. It looks like there will be the first ever in whatever 150 years of Portland an African-American woman on city council finally. So I think it's helpful to publicize and or try to strategize. Well, and the most recent thing is Obrador just won this weekend in Mexico, who's a left politician.
Mm-hmm.
And I see the unity part being more an international thing, mm-hmm. Which is that Trump's base is afraid of the creeping, whatever he calls it, infestation, I think is the word that he's used, of people who aren't rich and white, basically, and share his values, kind of overwhelming the isolated United States in Trump's view. And in many, many countries, it seems like there's some movement towards the left and trying to have things benefit workers and consumers. I'm just wondering if either of you have, basically to sort of ask the question you've been asking, and you may not, but if you have an overarching, to use Celeste's word, an overarching strategy, just more conversation, do you think, for example, the protesters between Patriot Prayer this weekend in Portland and Antifa, does that help the conversation or does it not? And I'll ring off and let you answer. It sounds like you got a buffer of people calling in. Thanks.
Hey, mm-hmm. Thank you, Lou.
Wow. I don't see that the violence helps anything. I don't see that. And I could be really, what is the word, a reductionist, and say it's testosterone flaring up because it fears its last gasp.
Okay. I think also, I'm not sure. Well, first of all, I think we live and always have lived in a violent society, and so I don't think we need to isolate a violence act. I think we have to look at the violence of our society generally. Having said that, I don't want to assume that all things are equal.
Mm-hmm.
But let's hear what some other people have to say.
Yes. Good morning, John.
Well, I think one of the obvious things, what they call the elephant in the room, it's apathy. I kind of been keeping up with a little bit of current events since retirement. Mm-hmm. And in 2014 election, less than 37% of the people who are registered to vote, and many people don't even register to vote,
right,
actually participated. Right. And in this last election, 2016, with Hillary and Donnie, it was even worse. So if you don't have people go out to vote, you're not going to get anything done.
And
really, I'm not saying anything, but there's really a small percentage. I think the United States is like in the Western democracies has the lowest percentage of people who even participate in their system.
So why do you think people don't vote, and what can we do to encourage that?
Well, one reason people don't vote, they says, what's the use? Nobody's representing me. You have many people working two jobs. They could care less what, you know, Fox News is looking at or MSNBC.
Yeah,
they're too busy working.
I think that's true, but I'm going to ask a question. How much do you actually believe that is accurate about these reports of how votes have been cast, how many, the percentages of what population, et cetera? Because we know that there is mis and disinformation out there. So I'm not inclined to believe all the time that all of these votes are shrinking. I mean, you look at the election for Ocasio-Cortez, and it was a landslide, but people say nobody's voting. So I assume that when they say we're seeing less and less people vote, that's also a form of propaganda to get people apathetic.
Well, it's like Father Joe Stalin used to say, it's not, you know, who's running, it's who's counting the votes.
Yes.
And, you know, I've listened to a couple of commentaries of Greg Palast. You know, I mean, literally, here in the United States, we have third world elections where they'll just throw the ballots in the garbage can.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Unplugged machines, all kinds of things.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, it just, I mean, like, well, he was given the example of Michigan and Wisconsin and
mm-hmm.
Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how is it that you have segregated areas in, like, you know, in Cleveland or, you know, Detroit, where they only have a couple voting machines and people stand in line for 8 hours, but if you go into some of the suburbs, you know, of Detroit or Cleveland, where it's all white, it's, you know, they have 15, 20, you know, openings going
mm-hmm.
on.
Well, and that's why I don't believe all of these statistics.
Well, oh, yeah.
And I say, don't let that get you discouraged. Just keep your, you know, pressing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's one of my points. That's,
mm-hmm.
that's great. You know, and I think that, you know, the United States has a third world, you know, voting system. Why can't we have it on Saturday and Sunday?
Because the powers that be are not going to let us, and unless we fight and make that happen.
Yeah. But until people are standing in the bread line with cold soup and stale bread, you know, they're not going to realize. They're going to say, well, gosh, something's wrong, you know.
Yeah, something's wrong.
Yeah.
I feel you. We know something's wrong. But
well,
again, we're attacked on so many angles, I think people are getting fatigued.
Okay, but that's part of the whole apathy. You see what I'm trying to, you know. I see a change, maybe not, I don't know. But, you know, I know that Rod Wyden, you know, tried to put in a bill for motor voter, you know, bill.
Uh-huh.
It didn't get to first base.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know. My whole thing, I'm looking at it, starting from point one, apathy.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's I think a lot of people have just hoisted the white flag. But anyway, thanks for your time.
Hey, but you know what? Keep talking to your friends, keep expanding your circles, and, you know, keep encouraging people to think critically and perhaps engage them from a different perspective, so you're not hitting them from their tired side. You're hitting them from wherever they've got energy.
Yeah, well, head up, shoulders back.
Okay. But hey. take a vacation for a hot minute, too.
Yeah, well, thanks for letting me talk.
Thank you. You're listening to More Talk Radio on KBOO. We would we solicit your conversation, your thoughts, your ideas, your insights, and our numbers.
Your
are
energy.
503-231-8187. Are we headed towards a civil war? Is a clash of ideas, ideology, inevitable? And if so, can we prevent it? Should we prevent it?
How do we mitigate it? Make it work. I mean, it's energy. Why not capture that energy and turn it for transformative results instead?
And let's go to Michael. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
Fair but partly cloudy.
How are you, Michael?
Almost evenly divided and in conflict with myself.
Oh, okay. So I'd say human.
Yes, exactly.
There we go.
I've been watching the polarization in this country get worse and worse and worse and worse over many years. And all of this time, I've been thinking to myself, something new needs to happen. Something sort of more like a new religion, maybe. Something that hits people in a deep way and just makes the polarization irrelevant. And I've been kind of keeping my eye out for and hoping for something like that to happen, and I may be starting to see it.
Are you starting a new religion?
I'm not. No, I'm not. I'm not that talented or
a new flavor of Pringles. Go ahead.
Well, there's a fellow you may have heard of named Jordan Peterson, and he's been in these fascinating conversations with people like Sam Harris and Dave Rubin and a number of others. He was just recently in Portland, Jordan Peterson was.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I'm hoping this develops may be something like, I know back in history at one point, Christians were divided between Unitarians, who believed the true nature of God was one, and Trinitarians, who believed that it was, I guess, the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost.
Mm-hmm.
And in England, they were killing each other over this. They were polarized to the point where they were actually killing each other over this. And I'm Jewish, so I suppose my ancestors were just glad that for once the Christians were killing each other and
not
us.
Not the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, then it just got to the point where people got fed up with that division and they went on to other things. And it's not like one side won and the other side lost. It's just like the polarization and the killing, and it all turned out to be futile and people just kind of forgot about it and moved on. And I'm kind of hoping that this new thing that I'm seeing happen around people like Jordan Peterson.
So what is this new?
Well, tell me why you like him. What is it about him you find a cohesive element?
Well, he's based in this very deep stuff. He spent like 15 years writing a book to try to answer for himself a question, and the question was, how could it be that humanity has divided itself into two teams during the Cold War that armed themselves with nuclear weapons and were ready to incinerate each other? How could that have happened? And what kind of person could I learn how to be, he was saying, that would, in a situation like that, or in a situation like Nazism or Maoism during the Cultural Revolution or what Stalin did, how could I become the kind of person who would not participate in the evil? So he went really deep into stuff like that, and he got into Carl Jung and all this other kind of stuff. So the guy is really deep.
Well, I want to ask you a question since you have discovered Jordan Peterson.
Yeah.
He is celebrated by some as being deep, but he is also a misogynist.
Well, no, he's not.
Oh, yes, he is. He says in his writings, when he speaks to incels, which are the involuntary celibates, which are primarily young white men, that they are right to be angry and that they should have women and they should be able to dominate women and that society used to celebrate heroes and give them women and that they are being mistreated because society no longer represents them by preparing them to be heroes, giving them opportunities to be heroes, and then rewarding them as heroes. I have read some of his stuff. I think you need to read a little deeper.
Well, you know, just by sheer coincidence, I watched a talk that he gave at Aspen on YouTube last mm-hmm. night. He was being interviewed by, I think her name is Barry Weiss, a New York Times reporter,
mm-hmm.
and she brought that very thing up to him.
Mm-hmm. So and how did he dance around it?
No, I can give you a summary of what he said if you like.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you will give the title of it, I'll just watch it.
Well, if you just Google Jordan Peterson and Aspen, it'll mm-hmm. or put it into the search term in the YouTube app, mm-hmm. it'll come right up. But let me give you like a 15-second version or a 30-second version of what he said. He said that 20. Okay. If you're a guy who every time you approach a woman because you'd like to have a relationship, they reject you, he said, the problem is you talking to the guy. The problem is you. You have a problem. You need to fix yourself. He wasn't. And then he said, you know, people have accused me of saying that society needs to provide these guys with women. He says, not only haven't I ever said that.
Oh, my
he says,
goodness.
No one in history has ever said that.
Oh,
that's
please.
What he said.
And you believe that? You believe
I do.
That? You need to read deeper and where he actually comes out and says this, or he has it in print. And furthermore, yes, society has told men that they get women. You know how they do that? By perpetuating the rape a culture, okay? Boys will be boys. Oh, that's just how men are. Oh, she gave in to it. Oh, she was wearing the wrong clothes. Oh, she asked for it. Yes, they do.
I think
you need to reassess. Now, I'm not trying to cut you down, but I've been talking about Jordan Peterson now for about 3-4 weeks or whatever, and I've been talking to my producer and Cecil about doing some more work on that. And I think I've posted, but I'll try to post a couple of things so you can go deeper because I don't want people fooled by this man.
Have you watched his talks at all?
Oh, yes, and I've done some reading of his stuff because I got sucked into him by one of, I have some of my conspiracies that I like to entertain. You know, it's kind of like watching, the X-Files or whatever, you know. And I got sucked into Jordan Peterson. And I thought, oh, what an interesting guy. Then I started going deeper and deeper and deeper. And you have to get past these sound bites in these interviews because he is smart in how he tailors what he says. You have to go beyond that and go read some of his material. Then it changes everything. Do that and come back to me.
I just finished reading this book he wrote called the one he spent 15 years on mm-hmm. called Maps of Meaning.
Yeah, I think you should read some of the reviews of that too.
Well, you know, what you're saying is people have expressed opinions about him.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to him, actually...
I do.
And one of the smart things he said in that talk was that YouTube is like a Gutenberg revolution because now the spoken word has the same reach as the printed word.
Mm.
And you don't have to rely on what some opinionated person
right.
says.
You read it yourself,
you
and that's what I'm saying
you
for you
and
to
listen
do.
Listen to him. And I've listened to a number of his lectures.
Okay. You know,
I don't hear what you're saying about him.
Well, you know, now that's interesting because maybe that's dog whistle discussions. Let's come back to this another day because I got another caller and we're almost
okay.
out of time.
Goodbye.
Okay, bye-bye.
And let's go to our next caller. Good morning.
Good morning, William.
Good morning. I'd like to address the issue of voting and people participating by voting.
Yes.
And I speak as someone who didn't vote for many years. Mm-hmm. And then my wife convinced me that, you know, as flawed as the system may be, it is the system we have. And today I encourage people to vote really for one essential reason, and that is self-respect. Hmm. You matter. You make a difference. You are important. We need to hear from you. And that's really the bottom line. I drive a cab, and I'm already in the process of talking to people and encouraging people to vote, and that is just simply the bottom line.
And how do
you
people...
matter. You are important. You make a difference. Please let us hear from you.
And the people you speak with who are not voters, how do they respond, or what is their...
What is their response when you tell them?
It catches people's attention, and okay. And people, for the most part, I don't meet a lot of people who don't vote, but it does get people's attention, and for the most part, they respond by saying they'll consider it.
Okay.
So.
Well, I like your approach. It's low-tech, but it's person-to-person, and that's when we make the most impact.
Yeah, and I think we ought to... political parties and you folks being on the radio and having a broad audience, I think that broadly speaking, way beyond just voting, that if we actually get personally and we get in our relationships with other people that we matter, we make a difference, and we are important, whether other people agree with it or not, whether the evidence seems to support that or not, we would make great as a species in the universe if we actually got that and started behaving from that perspective.
Hey, thank you so much. I think those are good words to conclude our program this morning.
Indeed.
Cool. Thanks so much for your program.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you for your call. So, you know, I just want to leave people with one thought: critical thinking, and take time out to inform yourself. It's really your, it's not just your right, it's not just your privilege, it's your obligation as a human being, and it's you making your mark on the world, you know? What would your following, your concluding thought be?
I think we all make a difference. And
I agree.
As you said. And you can make a difference by stay tuned to KBOO this morning. Not only voting, but be an informed person.
Mm-hmm.
At 9 on the old Mo Variety Hour, it boils down to the roots of the great issues of our time. At 10, Locust Focus looks at the new forest emerging in the gorge after the Eagle Creek fire of 1 year ago. At 11 on Making Contact, Beyond Stonewall, the push for LGBTQ civil rights. At 11:30 is Madness Radio, Voices and Visions from Outside Mental Health. And all these KBOO programs are made possible by members' support. So all members, we thank you. And if you like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate.
Do it now. This is your community connection, KBOO. Start your week out right. Smile for yourself and then for someone else.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to host the class Hip Hop Past, Present, and Future at Your Place in It with Mike Crenshaw on Saturday, July 7th and 4 p.m. at KBOO in Portland. This class will explore hip-hop history locally and nationally, KBOO hip-hop programming, how hip-hop influences art, culture, and political consciousness, rhyme, writing, and production, and how liberation struggles have contributed to hip-hop culture. Again, that's Hip-Hop Past, Present, and Future at Your Place in It with Mike Crenshaw on Saturday, July 7th at 4 p.m. at KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Keys Beats Bars Community Discussion on Sunday, July 8th from 3 to 5 p.m. at the Social Justice Action Center in Portland. Keys Beats Bars is a music program for incarcerated youth. This community discussion will be about how music empowerment can bring the community together and to learn about volunteer opportunities and general information about Keys Beats Bars, Morpheus Youth Project, Liberation Literary, and many others. Again, that's the Keys Beats Bars Community Discussion on Sunday, July 8th from 3 to 5 p.m. at the Social Justice Action Center, 400 Southeast 12th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I wish I was a mole in the ground. If I was a mole in the ground, I'd root that mountain down. And I wish I was a mole in the ground.
And good morning. You are tuned to KBOO in Portland, where the time is 9:01. And that's time for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm Clayton Margaridge, hosting today's show, along with our engineer, Patsy Kullberg.